Grade 6 Conference, the Main Lesson, Part 2. Before I talk about note-taking, I want to mention one other very simple matter, but significant matter. And this is the question of students raising their hands before they say anything. Here, like so many other things, the temptation is to get more casual and more relaxed about this sort of thing. And sixth graders start to ask for that. We're older now, and therefore, whatever. Rarely do they ask for more responsibilities, just for more privileges and rights. And this sort of relaxation of things can happen. Now, many teachers, again, to use Hamlet's phrase, honor hand-raising more in the breach than the observance. What happens when some children are able to just shout out because they got the right answer all the time, you know, and your back may be turned, you're writing something on the board, and you just say, yes, that's right. Or you're so happy to get a right answer that you, you know, don't really deal much with the formality of whether a hand was raised or not. As the children get older, and the class's etheric body develops, and you have this commonality of memory and experience, the students who would raise their hand patiently and not get picked because somebody else shouted out the right answer, those patient souls stop raising their hands. They just figure, I'm not going to get called anyway. Nobody really cares if I know it. He or she always knows the answer. So what happens is you start to get a group who actually could be fine students and maybe get the right answer two-thirds of the time. They now become very passive, and they just feel, you know, that the class is really being run and held by the three or four who call out the answers. The three or four who call out the answers all the time, because they realize that they have the right to shout out. As they get older, they don't really care if it's the right answer anymore. They just care about shouting out. They can do it. They can get away with it. They can say anything. And what happens is they start to shout out wrong things, irrelevant things, jokes. So now you've got nobody with the right answer, or at least nobody willing to venture to speak it. So if you have not been holding on to the idea of raising the hand, this is high time to return to it, or else you are going to be increasingly excluding an important group of kids in the class, the kids in the middle, the ones who in a way really are meant to benefit the most from a Waldorf education, and you're going to be making the bright ones arrogant. So please, raising hands, holding to formalities, ignore the answers, train yourself and steel yourself like Odysseus and the sirens. Don't listen if it's not preceded by a raised hand. Now, note-taking. It's only natural in grade 6, as the etheric body withdraws and the astral body grows stronger, that the forces which are endemic to the etheric body, that is, the forces of memory, are going to be weakened. They're still there. They've just taken a more inward role. They're starting to run for cover under the onslaught of the astral body. So we have to expect a period of time for the next 3 years in which students will show great lapses of memory. Strangely enough, usually having to do with responsibilities rather than privileges, but they're often genuine, that they will have a poor short-term memory, forget the most ridiculous things, be absent-minded. It comes and goes for some children. With others, it really remains a current in their life for some time to come. So you've got to give them an alternative. The material you're teaching them is more complex, more action-filled, more varied, and you're asking them to remember more, and yet their memory forces are weaker. So a bridge between the etheric memory forces and the more adult memory forces, which have to do with the interplay of the astral body and the etheric body, is writing things down. So now we're going to teach the children how to help their memory by using a pen and paper. I'm not suggesting that you teach the children how to work with the Harvard outline method or anything like that. It's a more relaxed method. So this is how I would go about showing my students. I would teach a history lesson. Let's say we were talking about the building of the cathedrals and what it involved to erect a cathedral. As I say, this is towards the end of the year when you might be in medieval history. And when that was over, it was shorter than usual. I told the students, I'm going to share something with you which I've never done before. You know, of course, even though I stand here before you speaking all of this without looking at any notes, as I've done for all the years before, but the night before, I do write down notes for myself. And then in the morning, I take a quick look at them. And I don't write down everything I'm going to say. It's not a script. It's much more like a skeleton that's going to support the flesh and blood of what I have to bring. So let me write my notes for this class up on the board. And what I did then was to write perhaps, 4-sentence fragments, my main thoughts, and then under each of those with a hyphen preceding it, some secondary thoughts. So perhaps there were about 12, 14 little sentence fragments there. Not even that much, most likely. And I told the students, now can you see? Can you see how I began and what I jumped to? You can see, probably I spoke about 300 words in between that first sentence fragment and the second one. And then the second one incorporates another 100 or 200 words. And then, so these are just my main points, and they get me started. They help me then recollect what else I'm going to say. And what I've had to do here is to distinguish between the most important things I was going to bring you and the things that were less important. So pretty much I would remain true to everything I've written on the board. You would definitely be hearing about all of this. But then I had a choice, even as I was speaking, about how much I would speak about a host of secondary and tertiary items as well. So taking notes like this helps me tell the difference between what's most important and what's less important. Well, I've spoken this way to 4 classes over the years, but in the 3rd class that I spoke to in this way, a girl started to cry. And everyone looked at her, "What's the matter? Why are you crying?" And she said, "Mr. Schwartz, I thought everything you taught us was important." And that was so distressing to her that there were things that perhaps were less important. So that, of course, I was not expecting. It really, that was a very profound experience vouchsafed by this girl's reaction to it. But I didn't stop teaching them anyway. Wouldn't deter me. So I asked them the next day, when I would go on with the subject, to do the opposite of what I did. I wrote the notes, And then I liked building a cathedral. This was the basic structure. And then I put the bricks and mortar around it and filled it with cathedral windows and other wonderful things, I hope. They were going to, not that I use this word, deconstruct what I brought. They were going to pull the bricks and stained glass windows away and behold the basic, almost geometrical structure of what I had to bring. And you can point to geometrical drawing away. This is, again, like erasing all the beautiful color and going back to the equally beautiful form. So I said, let's give that a try. You do this tomorrow. Oh, we can. I don't know how. It's so stupid. You can imagine. So, you know, what's happening now is that they're going to have to make the deed of remembering more conscious. This is huge. Their etheric body has been working on automatic pilot for all these years. You know, they recite things, they learn games and songs, many of them, almost instantly. And now that's not there anymore. So now when they listen, and you'll see, before you teach them how to take notes, you will find that the reviews start to get a little bit sluggish come the middle of grade six. They're not quite getting it all. They're forgetting important things. They're reversing things you've said, you know, mixing up people. Now you've given them an antidote, but it's one that requires work. So the next day and the days after, the remaining 4 days of the week, they took notes. And each day I would look over them, and I told them that, you know, these went into a notebook that they used for writing compositions. I said, and I would be looking these over, you know, this week every day and weeks to come, once a week. No, we would not take notes in all subjects. We're just going to do it in the remainder of this history block. And we're going to be doing it in perhaps geography or something like that towards the end of the year. But in grade 7 and grade 8, we're going to be taking notes more. This is just a preview. I looked at the notes then, day by day, and as you might expect, they varied. There were girls who wrote down every single word that I spoke, like stenographers, only without the shorthand. They just wrote down everything. And of course, they would be very proud of this later on because they were able to write incredible compositions. They basically just rewrote their notes double-spaced and it became compositions. So, of course, that's not what we want because that's purely etheric. That isn't working with the astral side of picking and choosing. You know, the sanguine astral body is very picky, very fussy. So that was one extreme. And what was the other extreme? Guess the gender who wrote 3 or 4 words for a half hour or 40-minute presentation by the teacher. I didn't know what to write. Okay, it used to be, you know, I can't write a composition. I don't remember anything. I don't know what to write. It's always, I don't know what to write. Same thing with the notes. So I had then girls and boys sit down together and look over one another's notes and talk about what they remembered and what they didn't and compare what people got. And we did this, throughout the block, not every single day, but pretty regularly, and I would share my notes with them, and this was not an overnight matter. In seventh grade, of course, the tendency still persisted that the girls tended to write too much, the boys much too little, and little by little by little, by eighth grade, you started to see that you were getting something that looked more like real notes. In sixth grade and for much of seventh grade, it's not the final result that matters, what the notes look like. It's the effort that they're making. And it's also a multitasking effort because, as you know, maybe it's one reason you're taking this online course instead of desperately taking notes in a live conference. As you know, you've got to be in two places at once. Part of you is writing notes, but the notes that you're writing were words that were already spoken a few seconds ago, maybe even half a minute ago. The lecturer, the teacher, is on to something completely new, and you're still writing down what was said before. So this is really quite something, especially when your teacher is saying, only write down what's important. Figure out what's most important. But this sense of differentiation, this sense of discernment, actually does come into being. And this is the age where it can be born. If you decide, well, in the high school, the first block they take in ninth grade, they're taught how to take notes. It's going to be a very mechanical matter in ninth grade. In sixth and seventh grade, it's something that is really going to live with them and really cultivate not just a capacity to take good notes, but a capacity to listen more carefully, to be able to listen outwardly and be living with what's said inwardly, really living between the etheric and astral bodies. So it's achieving something formative at this age, which would merely be external at a later age. And that's why I say it's a critical thing, and I would urge you to begin it at the end of this year.